Hello and welcome to The Loudspeaker, your definitive guide on how to scale your startup.
This first tip for every fintech startup is,
what are the media and press saying about us? How are we being perceived by these people?
PR stunts are any activities that allow you to engage with the audience.
I don't agree with the fact that all publicity is good publicity.
Here is where we talk to communications professionals from all around the world to let you know what are the best practices and cool ideas that you can implement for your startups. Let's get started. Gili, can you tell our listeners who you are and your experience in media and marketing? And I know you got a fairly decent background in this, so feel free to just go for it.
Of course, I'm Keely Walker and I'm a marketing specialist focused around storytelling. I work across companies large and small to unleash the power of story in order to position and resonate with their audience. My company is called KW Comms, and brands come to me when they're in a certain need state. They either have an underlying brand story that isn't working for them, it's just not resonating, or they're pre-launch and want to ensure that they're entering the marketplace with the correct messaging and positioning to rise above the noise in their category, which is actually easier said than done when there's such a huge amount of creative online at the moment. That's why I have a particular soft spot for startups and scale-ups, because they offer the chance to be truly creative. But regardless of where the company in question sits, my job is to identify where things are going wrong or getting lost in translation and figure out how to plug those gaps. So my services are completely bespoke to make absolute maximum impact on how a company is received, figuring out who their audience is, where to find them, and how best to communicate with them in a way that they can truly relate to. And I do all of this through the power of storytelling and creating a brand identity, a brand personality, and a brand narrative for them. And the way this is done is by really taking a brand and stripping it back and changing the script, even if that means rewriting the script, which would be a rebrand, or tweaking what's already there but is not somehow being communicated in their creative output. So what I do is anything from full-blown digital marketing strategy to social media, creative copywriting, or a full content audit and strategy. And going back a little bit further, a bit of history about me, I've always been in the media or editorial space. So even before I moved into marketing, I was earning a living telling stories. I spent the first part of the best part of 10 years as a journalist on Fleet Street, writing at one time or another for probably around 80% of national publications, often with the same story rewritten for the publication's particular tone of voice. And that was essentially my storytelling apprenticeship, my road to Damascus moment, if you will. I did a lot of ghostwriting during this time, and it's now one of the services I provide. Same applies to proofing and editing. I've recently ghostwritten a couple of children's books, and I do a bit of book doctoring. I don't know if you're familiar with that term.
What is that? No, I'm not.
Someone has a great idea, but the reason they haven't put pen to paper is because they just don't know where to start. So if that's the case, then I can provide a structure and give them bits of homework, which people do actually appreciate. So they know that at all times the narrative is being pushed forward. It's not an idea that's just gathering dust at the back of their minds anymore. You know, you would put a timing on things, and you would put some kind of structure together for them and make sure that they stick to it, which kind of segues me quite well to the last section in my services, which is the personal and professional development. So in fact, my business was born out of searching high and low for a partner, by which I mean an outsourced kind of guardian, if you will, who would help me through this process of building a business, forming a website, getting a PR function in place, and so on. Because I always say I can sell anything but myself. A lot of people feel like that. I'm getting better at it, but I I would far rather be promoting other people's projects than my own. Even if the project is something like a mindfulness business or a fitness blog, or one of my clients I'm really excited about at the moment is Homage, which is a male skincare company. It doesn't have to be about marketing. A good marketer will be able to find an audience and appeal to them in one way or another. It's just whatever you want to do with your career. So going back to my business, I could find different capabilities in different companies, but there was always a fixed amount of time that would be focused on a fixed package of limited functionalities. But I found that the only available options were based on whatever was decided on during my onboarding process and no more, rather than having the agility to pivot depending on the needs of the business as it went through its formative process. So I find, you know, or I found, if it doesn't fall into the limitations of your particular package, you're pretty much on your own, unless you have the time and budget to be managing several teams. But for me, I manage so many teams for my clients or partners, as I like to call them. I'm already juggling a lot of companies with their own KPIs. And this is the reason why I brought in the personal and professional development piece, because honestly, you wouldn't believe the amount of people that are suffering through their 9-to-5 jobs with no passion for it whatsoever. And they have a dream of leaving and setting up on their own, but they don't know where to start. So for those people, I guide them through that transition. And if you marry someone with a big ambition, with someone who knows the necessary steps to take it to fruition, then there's no reason that anybody shouldn't be able to work on their passion full time. And it's not something I could find when I was building my company, and that actually came to mold part of what it is that I offer, which is this range of services and the agility to pivot. So I built it, and while my services are separated into 6 core categories, partners are more than welcome to cherry pick bits from each and form their ideal package.
Awesome. I'm really glad to have you on, because you're clearly a creative guru in that sense. It seems like you've got a real back history in so many things that really, fine-tune you to be someone that knows a lot about storytelling. And I think it's really sweet as well, the fact that you were talking about how you kind of bring out the best in people when it comes to their creative passions, because you're absolutely right. I think that it's so easy to fall into a job or even a routine where you don't truly pursue your passions, and it can be very intimidating making that leap. So having someone like yourself to be that guide, I think that's really nice. That's really nice that you bring that out to people. But going back to one of your earlier points when you talked about, like, there's a lot of creative online, there's a lot of content online, and that's definitely something which we see a lot in this podcast when people come on. And that's one of the biggest challenges, is just being heard over all the noise. And I've definitely seen that storytelling and having some kind of like narrative and something that's compelling is so vital in that sense. But I'd love to know, in your opinion, why is storytelling important in PR and marketing?
Well, it's essential, because humans are hardwired to respond to stories, which is why creating one that resonates is so essential. And if you think about it, it dates all the way back to our childhood. Think about the boy who cried wolf. Everyone hears that story in their infancy and remembers it for the rest of their lives. And then think about how much less powerful it would be if you told a child, you shouldn't lie, because if you keep doing it, then one day you could be telling the truth and no one will believe you. That's not something that's going to resonate or something that you're going to remember. So from the first time you hear that story, and this kind of applies to any fable really, which is why so many of them are picked up at school, when our brains are like sponges and just soak up anything. It's programmed well into your brain, and you remember them well into your adulthood. If you said to a 30, 40, 50 year old and so on, remember the boy who cried wolf, or people say things like, he's literally the boy who cried wolf. Well, of course he's not literally the boy who cried wolf, but it's so drilled into our consciousness that we refer to it as fact. And that's why stories are so powerful and have been all through the years and are throughout our lives.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And there's so many fables and stories which I kind of remember with those kind of narratives. And also I find as well, for me, It creates a real like visual image as well of like this kind of story. So it's not just a fact which has no kind of like visuals or images in my head, but it becomes something which I can see with far more clarity. But I'd love to know what makes a good story in PR and marketing, would you say?
In PR and marketing, a good story requires a lot of EQ, emotional intelligence, as opposed to IQ. I always look for ESPs, emotional selling points, above USPs, which are the unique selling points, because granted, you need your USPs for dealing with investors and potential retail partners and that audience. But the question you need to answer to the public is, why should I care? And in order to create a good story, let's just look at classic storytelling tropes. So the hero's journey, you can apply to almost any story. And it goes sort of like this. Your hero lives in an ordinary world in which he, should we call him a he? Yeah, he is faced with a problem which becomes agitated to the point where they're desperate to escape. And the problem becomes further agitated as the hero attempts to conquer the problem to no avail. Part two, some kind of mentor figure, either a wise old lady or a wizard or whatever, depending on what story you're telling, appears and leads your hero to some kind of enlightenment. Part three, the hero is exposed to a solution and with help from his mentor and supporters, defeats his antagonist. The hero then returns to his ordinary world, but he's forever changed by the experience and everyone lives happily ever after. So how does this work in practice? We can take whatever story you want. I mean, the Lord of the Rings or Star Wars, let's go for Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. His ordinary world in Pivot Lane, wherever he lived, is miserable and he becomes agitated enough by this to uncover wizardly powers. That's point one. Hagrid is the mentor who leads him towards enlightenment. Voldemort is the antagonist he defeats. And at the end of the story, he returns to Pivot Lane, but he's totally changed by the whole thing. This is a structure that works in marketing. But where people are getting it wrong is by placing their product as the hero. Your product is the solution that allows your hero to defeat his problem. So your hero is the consumer. So putting the hero's journey in place on a good PR or marketing story is your hero, the customer, faces a problem, which is his need state or pain point when you're doing research, struggles to overcome it using your competitor's product, finds a wise mentor, which is your brand, who educates them and facilitates a return to a new normal, a better normal, because he no longer faces the problem thanks to your product. And you can apply that to any story that has stood the test of time. But it's at its most basic level, that's the journey that resonates with most people. Otherwise, it wouldn't still be getting used. And why should story-based marketing be any different?
Yeah, clearly you're absolutely right. There's something that's like entrenched in us that where we appeal to this and where we kind of like look to see it for entertainment or inspiration or whatever it is. And it really resonates with us. And I've heard of that kind of being explained before in the sense of like storytelling, but I've never heard anyone explain it in such detail from the sense of like a business or a PR or marketing perspective, just like how you've broken it down. So I think that's really cool. That really resonates with me. I like that.
If you're interested in seeing how Publicize can grow your startup, sign up for a free PR assessment on our website. And for a limited time only, exclusively for the Loudspeaker listeners, you can receive an SEO assessment as part of your package for any tier of service at no extra charge with this special promotion. To find out more, visit publicize.co/lspromo.
I'd love to know if you have any examples of businesses that have done this well or individuals that have successfully incorporated this kind of storytelling to promote their brand or business.
Yeah, I mean, there are seasonal examples and then there are ones that are just so timeless that they only ever require tweaking to keep the customer interested in your content. The best example of perfect seasonal storytelling is the John Lewis Christmas ad, so much so that it's actually become an event in people's calendars, and people wonder what it's going to be, what music's going to be used, how it's going to come across this year. And the reason it works year on and year out, again, it's that it always tells a story that appeals to our emotions. So remember there was that one where the dad was up late building the trampoline, and during the night the foxes and the badger jump on it, and the poor dog Buster the boxer, which actually became a hashtag. I think another year they had Monty the penguin, was stuck inside, Buster the boxer was stuck inside watching all the fun going on outside. And then the kid wakes up on Christmas Day and the dog runs straight to the trampoline and jumps all over it in the most adorable of ways possible. And it's completely heartwarming. And they got it really right. In place of a mentor in that story, if we're going back to the hero's journey, in place of a mentor, they sprinkle some magic on it, because Christmas is the only time that we're allowed to add anything supernatural without our audience feeling like, whoa, wait a minute, I'm not buying that. And so they literally don't buy it. But when it comes to Christmas, even as adults, we view Christmas really through the eyes of a child, whether you are one reminiscing about your childhood Christmas or trying to make it as magical as possible for the little ones in your life. Outside of Christmas, no adult is going to be convinced by anything supernatural. But come December, you have adults singing about sleigh rides and Santa Baby, who himself is a heavily marketed asset. And these are used as tools to shift goods. So we're a lot more able to suspend our disbelief at Christmas. And going back to your question, John Lewis really, really do make the most of that and make the most of the empathy marketing, which is something I'm currently researching and writing a book about. But looking at companies that have really nailed their storytelling, year round, would be companies like Apple. So what Apple does is, like I said above, they start with their purpose. Everything we do is, and then how they do it. And finally, you see what it is that they make almost as an afterthought, almost just as a final thought. But at this point, you've bought into them enough that you're suitably confident that whether they're launching an iPhone, a laptop, a tablet, we know that everything they do is ... And that's powerful messaging. And there's actually a fantastic clip from a TED Talk that goes into it in greater detail. He calls it the Golden Circle, a guy called Simon Sinek. So
I'm a big fan of his. Yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, a lot of people know about the Golden Circle, and he goes into greater details about the science and psychology about what part of the brain Apple are activating with their marketing and that sort of thing. Another way a brand has got their storytelling right is if you can recognize something by its silhouette, then you know it's iconic. So think of the Disney ears, again, the Apple logo, McDonald's golden arches. I could go on all day. Or by their taglines. Taglines are super important. Just Do It from Nike could mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and it does, but it works, which is why it stood the test of time.
Yeah, it was funny when you mentioned that, because when you said about the silhouette, first thing that came to mind was McDonald's, and you mentioned it. And when you said about the slogan or logo, first thing I thought about was Just Do It, and you mentioned it. So it's incredible how they really do have these responses conditioned in us. It's incredible marketing.
I think that's what Russell Brand was trying to do. I remember when he had that ridiculous hairdo. I think he was basically trying to make himself recognizable by his silhouette, which is the making of an icon. But there was some powerful branding behind Russell Brand.
Ironic. but I'd love to move on to know, like, what type of content, for example, video, audio, written, in your opinion, is the best for conveying a brand story, or essentially what they want to express.
Well, this is where your content mix comes into play, because although it might sound like an easy answer, but rather than focus on one type of content being the most powerful, the way you effectively convey a brand story is through consistency and repetition at lots of different touch points. So you have to be mindful of the fact that people are consuming your content through all these types of media, which is why not only your brand story, but the way you tell it, in other words, your tone of voice, is so crucial and has to be reflected at every single touch point, from your social media to your SEO strategy to your paid marketing and beyond. Every tactic has to be aligned. The biggest mistake that a brand can make is by siloing different elements of their marketing mix, so the consumer gets confused. So in terms of what's the most powerful, covering everything on the spectrum has its own power. You could argue that people have an ever-reducing attention span, and so video could be the most powerful because it appeals to the most senses, audio, visual, and even written if you choose to add a tagline in there. But then thinking about the marketing mix, it's also the most expensive to put together. And if a disproportionate amount of your budget is being channeled here, then the brand will suffer elsewhere, because it means neglecting the other important storytelling techniques and platforms that will get your tone of voice across, which is a critical part of your brand personality. You know, long form content is great for boosting your SEO, but it isn't something that you can expect people to consume at the awareness point in the user journey. So when you think of the marketing funnel, awareness, interest, consideration, conversion, retention, the top of the funnel needs to be incredibly short and punchy. So you're looking at your imagery, your tagline, animated short form content, which is most likely to be consumed on social. Then as you move down the funnel, you're looking at the thought leadership piece. So this is where you would think about staking your claim as a thought leader and becoming an authority in your sector. When they're at the bottom of the funnel, you have an engaged audience who are likely to buy or have already bought your product, which means email marketing comes into play because you're remarketing. So to come back to your initial question in a very roundabout way, there's no perfect marketing or constant mix. What you do need to have is A, consistent content across all of the forms, and more importantly, B, the ability and the agility to analyze what content is resonating best with your audience, and wherever necessary, increase the volume, so to speak, on whatever is working best and reduce it when it's not. And also knowing when to let go of a lot of tactics that aren't working for you, because you might have become attached to them. But if they're not working, then you have to know when to let them go so you can channel your budget and your creativity into something that is performing better when it comes to conversions.
Yeah, I have to say I agree. And one thing that you did mention, which really stuck out for me, is you're absolutely right about the videos. I think videos are such a great way of conveying information. But at the same time, as a content creator myself that specializes in audio and videos, videos are such a pain. They are so long and so laborious to produce. And when you compare that to audio, or even just taking the time to write something, it's definitely by far the hardest to start from, and then to get a turnaround date.
It's not just a budget in terms of resources. It's a budget in terms of talent and time. And you have to give up an awful lot to create a video. And whilst they're fantastic at getting a message across, you have to think that with the space and resources to create a video, what else could I actually do with that money? I could create, I could create a blog post, 10 social media posts, just so many different pieces of content that you think, yeah, it'd be great to capture it in 10 seconds, but that 10 seconds needs to be part of a broader marketing mix, content mix.
Yeah, I definitely get that. I think, to be honest there, you did a great job of really summarizing what people would need to do to get the best mix out of the type of content they've given. But other than that, perhaps what advice would you give to individuals listening to this who want to incorporate storytelling into their marketing?
I would say, first up, in the early days, you need to be outsourcing, making the most out of fresh eyes that you require on your projects, taking advantage of their network, because you can almost guarantee that they will provide more specific tools in a wider network than you have access to in-house. So it's also cost efficient, because the outgoings of an in-house marketing team are astronomical. And I cover a lot of this on a blog post I wrote called Why Outsourcing Your Marketing is a No-Brainer. And it truly is, because the other thing is that PR and marketing is seasonal, like we spoke about with Christmas. So there are times when it's all hands on deck and you need more creative and the competition is more fierce and your audience is in a genuine need state. Or there's times when your marketing needs to take a bit more of a back seat. And during these times is when thought leadership is the useful thing to focus on, you know, provided you have the people to read it. So my other piece of advice, and this is focusing more on the PR side of things, is that we're in this great age where we can identify journalists and identify them on grounds of what is their quote unquote beat, as we say. You wouldn't go to an automotive trade magazine and offer them a piece of political commentary. And I was a journalist for many, many years, and most of the pitches or press releases that landed in my inbox didn't even get opened. And the best way to combat this is to build personal connections with these journalists. So you have your hit list of publications, who you want to be seen in, then you find out which writer is most likely to respond and start casually getting into their subconscious, following them on LinkedIn and other social networking, liking their posts, researching their previous pieces so that you can connect with them on that level. There's a bit of flattery in there. More than anything, to build personal relationships, because, you know, as any journalist who receives dozens of emails a day will tell you, the ones that rise to the surface, if I have a personal relationship with these PRs, I would always listen to what they have to say and have a good go at spinning it into something principal. So that's why for me, PR doesn't stand for public relations, it stands for personal relations, because nobody wants to feel like they're on the receiving end of a blast email. They're busy people with deadlines hanging over their heads. And the amount I received, like, phone calls from PRs about some person falling out of a new club because their client is, say, Mihiki's, off the top of my head. And my question was always the same. Okay, what's the story here? I know what happened, but why should the readers care? It's that old kind of facts tell, stories sell adage. And lastly, if we're moving away from story, it's absolutely essential for any brand to do forensic competitor research. You need to know the players who are all trying to get the same market share that you are, inside and back to front, because without that, how are you going to compete? How are you going to differentiate? What are they doing well that we can take on, and what should we steer clear of?
Yeah, I think those are all fair points, and I definitely get what you're saying about the no one likes to be on the receiving end of a blast like email or just spam email, because I get a lot of applicants for the podcast that I work on, and yeah, so often I just receive one and it's so far from like what we focus on, and you can just tell they're just trying to get anything out there. But again, like you said, I've got many guests, or I've got many kind of contacts within the PR world where they have recommended a good guest for me. And then I listen to them again, and I give them my time, and then we work on ideas. And often I find that sometimes they bring me some of the best guests that I have because they understand the show. And I'm also willing to take the time to work with them to find an angle or to see how we can work together to produce something here. So I think you're absolutely right. It really is about building those personal relations with the right people and, yeah, connecting the right people as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Keely, if people want to keep up to date with what you're doing or just reach out to you, what are the best ways for them to follow you and to keep up with your work?
Well, the company is KW Comms, comms spelled capital COMMS. Reach out to me on social, but the best way to reach me really is that my contact information is actually on my website, so people can email me. I'm pretty sure my email is on my website, and get in touch with me on social media. But if it's a direct message, then email's always a good bet, and then we can move to phone or whatever. But email's what I check, and I don't even know if my phone number is up on or my work phone number is up on the website, either it is, in which case always WhatsApp, don't text and don't leave messages because I never listen to voicemails. WhatsApp is the place to get me on my phone, and email is always good. Awesome. My email is keely@wcoms.com. So it's pretty easy to remember. Just my name, keely@kwcoms.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your knowledge here.